This is Liz Barker on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Well, I'm delighted to tell you that our guest today has arrived. Quinton Carroll is in the studio with me. He is the Historic Environment Manager at the County Council. Quinton, it's lovely to see you. Thanks for coming in.
That's fine. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to Cambridge 105 Radio. Now, I'm very excited because I have only just discovered that there is a nuclear bunker in Cambridge. This was I was oblivious to this knowledge. It was unnoticed. And I now feel safer. Feel safer in my bed when Trump goes off on one. That, you know, there's somewhere to go. Not that I would necessarily be allowed in. Do I get special preference privileges?
It has a broadcast studio.
Does it? Well, let's talk about it in detail, because a nuclear bunker was built, obviously, in Shire Hall, is it?
It's underneath one of the buildings behind Shire Hall, yeah.
So when was it built?
In the late 1980s.
And why was it built?
It was built as part of the government's preparation for a major incident like a nuclear war. And under the government plans, various powers were passed down to different levels of authority to help govern the country in the event of something like a nuclear strike. This had been the plan since the 1950s, I think. And so in Cambridge, we have what's called an RSG, or Regional Seat of Government, bunker, which is the central government's presence in Cambridge, and that's on Brooklands Avenue. So you're saying about there being a bunker, there's actually more than one. And that's a big concrete structure on Brooklands Avenue, which is still there. And then each local authority also had duties that it had to carry out involving rescue, recovery, health, medicine, law and order, and they had to be coordinated from somewhere that was hoped would survive any attack, so all the efforts could be controlled from there. So, which is why we have this facility at Shire Hall. It's where the County Council would have tried to organise and lead, basically, the response and clear up and helping the people after a nuclear strike.
So I presume in the 80s the threat was what, Russia?
It's the Cold War. You mentioned Trump, and I think this is why people are asking about the bunker now, because of Trump and North Korea. But it's quite, for those of us who are children of the 70s and 80s, the Cold War was an absolute complete threat of nuclear strike, with the Soviet Union's arsenals all aimed at the West. So yeah, it's a product of that. The irony of this one is it's built towards the end of the Cold War, when you have Gorbachev taking over the Soviet Union and the thawing of relationships between East and West, but we still had to upgrade the facilities because those were the plans, and we built the bunker.
So basically, if the big red button is pressed, do you get warning? I mean, would there be an alarm sound? What would happen in the reality?
In the reality, I suppose all the plans would have been out the window. I mean, they talk about 4-minute warning, and that would have been what we get. I wasn't at the council then, but from what I understand from people who were, there was a list of people who were allocated into the bunker, and they were mainly there to coordinate the responses. So in there, there's a big control room, which would have had telephone lines and contact desks and maps, and all the information from the surrounding area would have been fed into that control room and sifted through and sorted, so then the decisions could be made. What medical facilities were up and running, what fire facilities were up and running, and that would allow people down there to determine it. So it'd be people there to control that. It had liaison officers from the army and scientific officers as well. And as I said earlier, a little broadcast studio, because they have to make transmissions out and
let people know what's going on. So, I mean, when you say control room, is it like my desk? Is it got lots of knobs and buttons, and is it more like just lots of TV screens, or what?
Now it's just an empty room, because it was decommissioned and turned it into offices. It had desks, it had control panels. It's all 80s technology.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are quite a few of the old British Telecom logos around in there, because obviously they were the telecoms providers when it was built.
So how many people would it hold?
I believe it did hold between 30 and 40 people. And they're supposed to be down there for some months.
I was going to say, there must have been provisions at one time.
It has
kitchen or bathroom?
It has toilets and showers. a kitchen, a storeroom, a dormitory, and what's called on the plans a dining hall, but it's really just somewhere to sit and eat without, I think. And then the other two-thirds of the bunker are the operations rooms, the liaison rooms, and then down the end is all the spaces for the machines, diesel tanks, and the communications equipment, generators and things. That's all in there as well.
So when they built it, I imagine, how do you make it nuclear-proof? I mean, other than very thick walls, I can't imagine what materials would have been used.
It's actually partially exposed, because it's by a vehicle ramp into an underground car park. And the entrance, well, one of the ways into it is from the car park itself. It's thick concrete walls, steel reinforced concrete walls and ceiling. It has a lot of earth over it as well, flower beds and things. The end of it that has, which is where the communications and sensitive equipment would have been, has a Faraday cage in it, or something like a Faraday cage, which is metal banding around the room, which is designed to block electromagnetic pulse, which is a byproduct of a nuclear explosion. Whether it would have withstood a direct hit, I very much doubt. From what I've seen of the estimates of what would have happened in Cambridge in the event of a nuclear exchange, we would have got we'd take a lot of hits from strikes on places like Alconbury, Laken Heath, Brampton, Witten, Molesworth, Mildenhall. We would have been caught in the blasts of those. So rather than taking a direct hit as such, we'd have probably sustained a lot of building damage and things, which was just collapsed on top and had to the overall protection.
So you're saying Cambridge is a bit of a target? Cambridgeshire?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, we have so many important bases here, both in the county and surrounding the county, that it would have been an obvious target for Soviet warheads.
Okay, I'm really glad you came in, Quinton. Really, really put my mind at rest.
fortunately, that was a Cold War, and that was a long time ago.
Things do change. It's really fascinating talking to you, because obviously the history in Cambridge, there is a lot of things. Well, I say it was a secret nuclear bunker. Was it secret, or has it become? Is it common knowledge? Would it have been?
No,
secret?
It's not. It's well, when it was built, it was fairly. It wasn't exactly shouted about. I mean, but ironically, we actually have a copy of one of the Russian military maps for Cambridge, and it's marked on that. So they knew where it was. it's not a state secret as such, but it wasn't. And now when we open it, which we do once or twice a year for people to come in, people have no idea it was there.
No.
They have no idea about the Cold War. They have no idea about... Although this was put in place to help look after, to provide a control centre, the rest of the population, the instructions were to take doors off and leave them against walls.
Is that really what they were told? Yeah. Take doors off?
Take doors off, find a strong internal wall, like a staircase wall, lean the doors against it and pile sandbags and things on top of the doors, and then go in there. And that was in the government instruction book, protect and survive. That was to be sent out to homeowners in the event of escalation of tensions. And we built one of these shelters inside.
Yeah.
In the gent showers, actually, just to show people what the advice was for protecting the for how to protect yourselves.
I'm thinking cockroaches are the only things that are going to survive. that is not going to protect me.
Like I said, it was fortunately the Cold War went hot.
Yeah, yes. I mean, we're going to have a travel update now. And good choice, Quinton, good choice. And you're very interesting, because obviously you know your stuff. You were just saying on the longer version of that, there is, what were you telling me that there's...
Oh, there's a narrator on there who is reading what sounds like instructions of what to do in the event of nuclear war. And what it is, it's the narrator for the Protect and Survive film that the government made, that will be released if felt a war was going to happen. They will transmit all these films and send information out telling people what to do. And it's the same voiceover who did Protect and Survive, who did the voiceovers in the 12-inch single version of that, for those of us who remember 12-inch singles, reading extracts from the Protect and Survive script, which is still an official secret at the time.
Amazing.
It's the '80s, you've got to love it.
It's a great fact. It's a great fact. So we were saying that obviously the bunker in Cambridge, the nuclear bunker based at Shire Hall, people can go and see it occasionally, can't they?
Yes, they can. It's decommissioned now. It isn't used for office or anything like that. And half of it is used as storage by the archaeology team, which I'm responsible for. And we use it as environmentally controlled storage for the material that comes out the ground and needs ongoing care and store. The rest of it's kept elsewhere. And so we've got that, and the story of the bunker itself, and the story of Cambridge and the Cold War. We have displays about that. We try and open it for Heritage Open Days. An open Cambridge, which is in September. We didn't this year. We thought we'd have a year out, but we are planning on September 2018, assuming open Cambridge is happening. And also we've worked with Kettle's Yard when they've done their Castle Hill open days. We've opened as our contribution for that. Kettle's Yard, I think, reopens next year. So if they do an event, we'll join in with them. But the thing is, keep an eye on the archaeology Facebook and web pages on Open Cambridge when that comes out. And it will say how to come and see the bunker.
So there are archives kept down there, because obviously there's a lot going on archaeologically.
Yeah, there's archaeological material down there. Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that. What's kept in there?
Oh, most archaeological material, when it's excavated and cleaned, is fairly stable. So things like animal bone or pottery or things like that, provided you keep it in a reasonable environment, it's okay. There are other things like organics, so leatherwork, metalwork's another one, where you need specialist environmental conditions. You need to keep it dry, for example. We've got several spaces in the bunker which have environmental controls on them now, so we can keep all our metalwork in very good condition. So when people want to come and study it or use it for museum exhibitions, it's there. And we get samples out of all the material that we hold when we open the bunker up as well.
Because it's quite an interesting area of Cambridge. We've got Shire Hill, you've got Castle Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So Castle Hill is obviously, what is it, the last... Was it
Castle Hill's Morton Bailey Castle, built by William the Conqueror in 1067, I think it was, as part of a way of controlling the river crossing across Cambridge. And then it stayed as a castle for hundreds of years and evolved into being a Civil War artillery fortress. Oliver Cromwell was based here for a while. And eventually they built a prison on there and then demolished the prison and built Shire Hall.
I love the way you say that so matter-of-factly. There's a lot of history there. That is quite a momentous amount of history, actually.
On one site.
Yes.
Well, underneath that, of course, you've got a Saxon town, a Roman town, an Iron Age village, all on top of that one site. It's high ground overlooking a river crossing. It's prime settlement land.
Yeah, because obviously, a girl from Cambridge like me, that was basically the only hill around for a while. And
the only place where you can sledge, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And go and get any kind of view. But now it's obviously, people still go and visit, don't they? And then they come along.
A lot of people go up there.
Yeah. And you, I mean, as Historic Environment Manager, you're in charge of what's sort of happening?
I'm responsible for the council's archaeological responsibilities, which are mainly around planning, but I also advise our estates and property on how to look after scheduled monuments. The council is scheduled. Castle Hill is a scheduled monument. It's protected by law, and there's only certain things we're allowed to do. Anything else than that, we have to get permission from the government. It's the same if anybody owns a scheduled monument, and so I tend to work with my colleagues in the estates on making sure that we look after all our scheduled monuments. We've got about 15 of them.
Cambridge?
Yeah, around Cambridgeshire.
Oh, Cambridgeshire.
That we look after them properly and we don't damage them. And we try and give as many people access to them as we can and information about them. Should say they're part of everyone's history. We're a local authority, public service. We should help people find out about them.
Do you have a favourite one?
Favourite scheduled monument?
Mm.
Oh, now you're asking. Probably it's one that we don't own. I wish we did. And it's probably Erith Bulwark. It's a Civil War artillery fortress in the Ouse Washers, and it's never suffered plough damage. Because we're such an arable county here, a lot of our sites have been ploughed. Erith Bulwark, because purely because of where it is, has never been ploughed. So all its earthworks are beautifully preserved. You can see the technology and thought that went into the design to create overlapping fields of fire from artillery points. It's a beautiful, beautiful sight.
I've never heard of it, actually. I shall have to go and visit.
You can't, fortunately, you can't get on it.
No.
But sometimes, again, there are trips out there.
Yeah. It's a fascinating job you do, I think. I mean, we've gone from bunker to, you know, you don't know where you're going to go next, really.
You have to do quite a lot in this job.
Yes. I think it's, obviously, the bunker attracted me. That's why I asked you to come on as a guest. Mm. And you say it's not the only bunker in Cambridge. There's also another one.
On Brooklyn's Avenue.
Avenue. But there's so much more to Shire Hall than you sort of realise than getting married. although if you did choose to get married there, then obviously there's a contingency plan if anything goes wrong. So it's not working now, it wouldn't be used now, there's nothing there, there's no beds made up, there's no food there. There's nothing, but it's quite an interesting piece of history, like you say.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really enjoyable talking to you, Quinton. And if anybody wants more information, then like you said, just check out the website and Facebook page. Is that right?
Open Cambridge is usually in September, and the booking for it normally starts around May, I think.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But just look for Open Cambridge and keep an eye on that. And with Kettle's Yard, it depends when they open.
Yeah, hopefully soon. Well, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you very much for coming in, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon. Take care.